Today Shem Sefer Mitzvah Daf Kuf Dalad. We will begin on Daf Kuf Dalad Amun Aleph on the top line. Amra Papa. As we discussed in the previous year, there are essentially two types of relationships that we can have when somebody works on someone else's field. We can have what's known as a chakiris, which is essentially rent, where he pays. You could pay cash, you could pay produce, and then you have a resis, which is a sharecropper, where the worker on the property gives a share of the produce to the landlord. Amra Papa. So Papa makes the following comment. Hanitati misnisa kamaisa. The first two mishnais of our perek, mishkachs labem bechakrinaisa ben bekavunasa. The halachas discussed in those mishnais apply both to a chakira situation and to an arisa situation. Although, as we pointed out, and as the mefarshim point out, one of the halachas that we learned in the previous mishnah, the first mishnah of our perek, where the mishnah discusses that not only are the grapes divided and the wine divided between the landlord and the aris, but also the poles, etc., is really a halacha that only speaks to arisas. But most of the halachas in these two first mishnayis speak both to an aris situation and to a chakira situation. However, says Rapapa, mikan veilich, as we go further in our perek, learning more mishnayis, more halachas, the isa b'kabel nusa, less b'chakinusa, there's certain halachas that point that are only relevant to kablonis and not to chakiris, and there are certain halachas, disa b'chakinusa, less b'kablonusa, that apply to chakiris and not to kablonis. And as we, Mitzvashem, will learn these mishnayis, we will try to point out which halacha applies where. We learned in the Mishnah yesterday, im omaloi chakoli sada beis shalchanzeh, if it was said, work for me in this field that has the stream for irrigation next to it, and then it turns out that the stream is dried up, the worker has a right to reduce, deduct from the rent. Ask the Gemara, v'mai, why is this a legitimate reason to deduct from the rent? Lemalei, why can't the landlord say, Shma ba'alma amrilach? When I call this field the Beis HaShalchin, and I identified it as having a stream, I didn't mean that it actually has a stream. I meant that this field is known as a Beis HaShalchin. It has that title, it has that name, even though it doesn't actually have a stream. For as we have learned, there is such a concept. Mila Tanya. Ha'im l'chaveroi, Beis Kor Ofra Ani Meichelach. If somebody says to somebody else, he's selling him a kor. A kor is 30 saw. I'm selling you 30 saw. And then when the customer shows up, he sees there's only a lesach, which is half of a kor, higiyoi. The sale is still valid. Why? Shleimachaloi al shma. What he meant was that this place is called the base kor, even though it doesn't have a kor there. However, points out the Braisa, v'hudu miskari base kor. This explanation that the seller is saying that when I told you I'm selling you a base kor, even though it doesn't have a base kor, I wasn't lying, because that's the title this place has, is if indeed it has that title. Similarly, if a seller says to a buyer, Karmani Meichlach, I'm selling you a vineyard, Abish Einbei Gefanim, and there are absolutely no grapevines in that area, Higiyoi, the sale remains a sale. Why? Shleimachala el shma. He didn't mean that it actually has grapevines. He meant that this place is called a karma. But however, it has to be a situation for who the miskri karma. That's a place that's called a karma. Similarly, if he says paradis ani meichelach, he says I'm selling you a paradis. A paradis means a pomegranate field, as the pasuk says in Shir Shirim, shulchayich paradis rimoinim. Abish Einbei Rimoinim, even though there are no actual pomegranates there, Higiyoi, the steel sale is valid, Shleimach LaShma, and this place is called the Paradis, probably as the Mefarshim say, because once upon a time, there were pomegranates here. However, again, Because what he meant was, I'm selling you a place that has this title, it has to be a place that has this name. So we see that even though it was described in a certain way, and then the actuality doesn't match the description, it's still a satisfactory sale. Alma, Amalei Shmava Alma, you could say something and say that's what the place is called, even though it doesn't have actually those physical attributes. So Amrilach, so ask the Gemara, Shmava Alma Amrilach, I only gave you a name, so why also in our Mishnah, ask the Gemara, don't we say Hachanami? Why in our Mishnah also don't we say Namalei, that the seller could legitimately say to the buyer, Shmaba Alma Amrilach, I just called it a certain name, because that's the name it has, even though it doesn't necessarily have these characteristics. Amishmulai Kasha. Hadalai Machalachiker. The Brisa is referring to a situation where the landlord is describing the area to the tenant. And as the Brisa has been, Brisa, the Gemara, have been teaching us, that the seller, the landlord, can legitimately claim that I use this title because that's what it meant. If, on the other hand, it's the tenant or the chayker who's coming here, then the halacha is different. Because there, why did he say it? Because this is what he was looking for. And if the landlord doesn't deliver what he was expecting, it's unacceptable. And the Gemara explains itself. If it was the landlord that used this name, we could say Shma Ba'alma Amalei. All he meant was to use the title that this field has. On the other hand, in a situation of Amalei Chaykel Amachker, where it's the tenant speaking, there we say that the tenant is saying it because he's expecting it, requiring it. Kpeda, he's being mapped that it should be there. And if it ends up not being there, he has a legitimate claim. Ravina Amma, Ravina has a different way of reconciling the Mishnah and the Braisa. He says, Edi v'Edi, both the Mishnah and the Braisa are referring to a situation, Damalei Machkel Chayker, that it's the tenant that's speaking. However, in the case of the Mishnah, it's referring, as the Mishnah actually says, mid the comma zeh, because the tenant is using the word zeh, mechlal b'koy b'gavo askinan, that the tenant is actually on this property. So if he's standing there, and we know exactly what he's talking about, so the question is, beis ha-shalchan lamali l'mei mid the comma lei. Why did, beis ha-shalchan lamali, why does he have to use the word Beis HaShalchan? And as the Mefarshim can help us understand the Gemara. What emerges from the Gemara that we've been learning today, there are two reasons we could explain why somebody would use the word Beis HaShalchan. It could be used as a description of the property that's being bought, or it could be used as identification. This place is called the Beis HaShalchan. In a situation where we know exactly what piece of property is being discussed, we don't need it to be used as an identification. The property has been well identified. We know exactly what he's talking about. By using the word Beis HaShalchan, it must be that it's being used as a description of this property. And it's a description that the tenant is expecting. And therefore, if that description is not met, he has a legitimate claim. Whereas, where it's not clear which is the piece of property being discussed, there we could suggest that the word Beis HaShalchan is not being used as a description, rather it's being used as a way of identifying exactly which piece of property is under discussion. And therefore, the fact that it doesn't have a stream, if we have a way of explaining why it's called Beis HaShalchan, as I said earlier, because maybe once had a stream, the tenant has no claim. And let's learn the Gemara inside. Midakamazah, the Mishnah refers to a situation where the word zeh was used. By using the word zeh, mechlal the koy begavoskinen, that the tenant is on the property. So we know exactly what property is being discussed. Beis hashalchan lamli lameimer. Why does he have to use the word beis hashalchan? It must be the kamalei beis hashalchan, the kaim ashta, that has to have the stream there. And if it doesn't have the stream, or the stream is dried up, he has a claim for reduction of rent. Machlokes rishonim. How to understand what Ravina is doing here? Because the first teretz that the Gemara gave, Shmuel's teretz, was to make a distinction between who was initiating this statement, the tenant or the landlord. Is Ravina going to agree with Shmuel's distinction between the chayker and the machker, and now Ravina just giving another teretz? Or do we understand that Ravina disputes Shmuel's explanation, and he's giving a different way of understanding the Mishnah? Says the Mishnah, Hamakabel sodom chaveri. If somebody accepts upon himself to work on a field, the vira, and he leaves the property completely unused. Now, again, the Rishonim saying this works perfectly with the way we began today's shiur. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation of an oris, not of a tenant. Because a tenant is obvious, you have to pay your rent. So if you didn't use the field, the rent you still have to pay. Here we're referring to a situation, there's an arisus arrangement. And the oris is supposed to pay a percentage to the landlord. And the oris, instead of working the field and the field producing, and now you'll be able to turn over a percentage to the landlord, doesn't work on it. Hamakabel sod mechavira v'hoivira, he leaves it unworked. Shamanai soy, kam rui lasois, we make an assessment, what would this field normally make? V'noisenloi. And he has to give that amount that would normally be produced. Because, says the Mishnah, shakach koisavloi, because the wording of the agreement says, im oivir v'loi evid, if I will not work the field, asham v'meitava. There are two pshatim and the word meitiva that don't necessarily contradict each other. One pshat is b'sham meitiva, means that he will make an assessment. We make the assessment, and not only do we make the assessment, but we make the assessment on with the assumption that it would have produced an excellent batch of crops. It would have made meitav. Another explanation is, so now we make this assessment, and now the oris has to give the landlord whatever he has to give him. Not only does he have to give him, but what kind of produce does he have to give him? He has to give him meitav, he has to give him very high quality produce. Says the Gemara, Remeya hayudairish loshen hedget. Remeya would work with the wording of a regular document. The Tanya, Remeya oimer, the case of our Mishnah, im oivir v'loi evid, asham v'meteva. So Rashi explains the Gemara this way. The number pshatim the Rishonim, how to understand this Gemara. Rashi explains the Gemara as follows. We know that many times Chazal institute that certain terminology should be included in a document. Says our Gemara that even if that language was not instituted by Chazal, it's just that people use it all the time, that is enough to be considered very serious, and we follow that language. That's Rashi's pshat. Another pshat, similar, is as follows. We know, for example, we learned the Gemara many times, Masechet Ksubos, that if Achrai is Tor Sofer, that let's say every document under normal circumstance, if it's a property sale, has to have in it Achrayus, that there's a lien on the property. Let's say it was omitted. We say it was a mistake. Here, too, this became so standard in every arisus contract that even if it's not there, it's as if it's there. Another pshat that I saw is that we know there are halachas regarding hilchos tanoim. We've discussed them many times. For example, one of the fundamental halachas of tanoim, actually Remeya says this all the time, is that you need to have a tanai kofel. Here the Gemara is teaching us that even if it wasn't written properly, example, our Mishnah is a perfect example, the Tanai, that I'll work it, if I won't work the field, I'll have to pay you anyway. Wasn't written. And if I work it, I'll give you. And if I don't work it, I'll have to give you. You don't have the right tonight, kofel. It's still good enough. A fourth pshat that I like very much is as follows. We know, we say this many times ourselves, there's a difference between when we speak, when we learn a Mishnah, a Gemara, or even we learn something in a Rishon. When we learn something in a Mishnah, in a Gemara, in a Rishon, every word is precious. And why a certain word was used, and what was said, and what wasn't said, is all very significant and taken into consideration. Certainly when we speak to each other, you know, we're not the Rambam, and we don't put so much emphasis on every word that we use exactly. Says Reb Meir, and the Gemara is going to offer some more situations as such, that the halacha is that every word of the shtar is to be taken seriously. And therefore, if he wrote that I have to work, what's understood is that if you don't work, you'll have to pay anyway. Reb Yehuda Yidarish Lashon Hajit, Reb Yehuda gives a different such example. The Tanya Reb Yehuda Omer, Adam Mevi Kavan Ashar Lishtai. A person, we know, there's certain kavanas. The example we use is if somebody's a Zav or a Zava, they have to bring a carbon. Now the carbon that's brought is the Kamchatas, the Kavan Asham, are a carbon oil of a Yairid. Depending on the financial status of the person who's bringing it, that's the type of carbon that has to be brought. Says the Brisa, Adam Mevi Kavan Elishtai. You have a person who's Baruch Hashem wealthy. His wife doesn't have her own independent assets, but if she's mechuyif to bring a carbon azov, you bring it according to the husband's financial status. The king called carbon she chayavs, and so is the halacha in every carbon that she is obligated to bring. Shekar chas of law, because so is written in the shtar, achrayist islach alayim mikadmas dana. This, he accepts upon himself all of the responsibility for things that she's responsible to bring, and if she has to bring a carbon, she became a zava, for example, he has to bring a carbon. However, as Rishonim point out, certainly, if a woman accepts upon herself a neder, or accepts upon herself a naziris, the husband would not have to bring that carbon. Why? Because a woman could break her husband that way. She'll keep on making nedarim and violate them, naziris and violate them, and he's going to have to keep on bringing kabanas. So certainly he doesn't have to bring that carbon. On the other hand, there's an interesting shaila. What's going to be the halacha? Our Gemara speaks about a zava. Zava is not something that she actually had control over. It happens to her body, a yeledes, for example. But what would be the halacha if a woman is mechal Shabbos? Would her husband, b'shoigig, that she has to bring a carbon chattis? So on one hand, you could argue, she chose to be Mechal Shabbos. So why should the husband bring the carbon? On the other hand, the carbon is for a kapara. There, most Rishonim suggest that she would have to bring, that he would have to pay for her carbon. Why do we follow his financial status in determining what type of carbon should be brought in a situation of carbon oil v'yaret? So the simple pshat is ishta kigufay. And therefore, whatever he is what she is. The Brisker Rav has a very nice pshat. The Brisker Rav says that the Torah, in introducing the parasha of carbon oil of a yarid, says, Vim loitasig yodai. What does loitasig yodai mean? That you don't have access, you don't have the ability to bring the more expensive carbon. She does have access. She does have the ability. She has a wealthy husband. The Chasam Sofer says that actually the din that our Gemara teaches us is actually to be learned in the Pasuk. Because the Pasuk, when it speaks about the carbon asham, says v'svadu es avoinam. It starts with a Lashon Rabbim, and then it continues v'shilim es gzeiloi. I don't remember the exact wording, but it speaks about a Lashon Yochid. So it says the Chasam Sofer, the Pasuk's inconsistent. It starts with a Lashon Rabbim and then it's off with a Lashon Yochid. So he says, beautiful pshat. There could be a Rabbim bringing the carbon Asham, either the husband or the wife. But when it comes to paying, there's only one person that's paying, the husband. Says the Gemara further. Hilal Zokin, Hayudarish Lashon Hajid. He gives another example of Lashon Hajid. The Tanya. Anya, Anshe Alexandria, Yimekach Meshna Sisayim. the Ansh and Alexandria would be Mekadosh their wives. And we know Mederaisa, Erison makes a woman into an Eshesish. Ubshas Knisos and L'chuppah, as they were going to the Chuppah, Borim Achein V'chaitim Esem, other people would violate them. Ubikshu Chachomim, last of the name Memzerim. Because as I said a second ago, a woman that's an Arusa is an Eshesish. And if somebody else has relations with her, the children are Achmon Otzlam Memzerim. Omlem Hillel Zaken. So Hillel Zaken said, Hevi'li Ksubas Imchem. Bring me the Ksuba of the mother. Hevi'li Ksubas Imot. So he looked at the language of the Ksuba. Omasa Kosbehen. And the Pasuk uses the words, and the Ksuba uses the words, L'chishitichnasi L'chuppa. As you become to the Chuppa, Havli L'intu. So what does the wording the Ksuba indicate? That the Chuppa and the marriage that only begins at the time of the Chuppa. So these women, if they were violated prior to the chuppah, weren't Eishes Ish. And therefore, for also b'nei mamzerim. Actually, I saw that the Mepharshim say that this is, Gemara is the source for a very famous minig. The minig in many communities is that a chosin, a kala, from after the oifruf, certainly the day of the chasana, need a shomer. They shouldn't be allowed to be left alone. They shouldn't walk in the street alone. Why? Why do they need a shomer? Because Al Gemara says that they used to violate. They used to start up with the chasen kalas. That's why the chasen kala need a shomer. Says the Gemara further. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha hayadar shloshen hadit. The Tanya, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha ima hamavas chaveroi layishkenenu yoyse mechayvoi. Which means as follows. There are two situations of a mashkin. One situation of a mashkin, we've actually spoken about both of them many times. One situation of a mashkin is that I lend you money and I request security. That's not the case that this brisa speaks to. The case that this brisa speaks to is that I lent you money and then the time to pay comes and you don't pay me. At that point, the Torah teaches us that I could demand and request from you a mashkin. But the Torah also teaches us, have it Tavitenu, that if I take from you something as a mashkin, and it's something that you need, then I have to give it back to you. If you need it by day, I have to make sure you have it by day. If you need it by night, I have to make sure you have it by night. That's the mashkin that our Bryce is referring to. And it says, Hamavos chaveroi, if I lent you money, and now you didn't pay me the money that you owed me, and I take this mashkin from you, loy mishkimenu yos mechayva. You, the loiva, should be careful that the mashkin you give me should not be worth more than the loan is worth. Shekach kaisvloi, because when this mashkin is given from the loiva to the malva, the shtar says, teshlumech the islach alai, the obligation, the claim that you have against me, that you, the malva, have against me, the loiva, kol kabodachi. Will be satisfied by me giving you the mashkin. So what is he writing in this document? What he's writing in this document is that the mashkin is in lieu of the payment. And therefore, even though the mashkin, or if the mashkin is worth more than the obligation, the malva could take that value, and the malva will end up getting more than was actually lent. Says the Gemara, Tama, what do we see from this Gemara? Tam the kasavay hachi, because as we just said it. This wording is written eloi kasavay hachi, which seems to indicate if there were no specific document with this wording in it, like Tanya, it doesn't become the malvis automatically. Ask the Gemara from Rabbi Yochanan mashkinoi veheshvloi mashkin. This is the case that we just spoke about, that somebody owed me money, he didn't pay, I took a mashkin from him, and the halacha is, as we just said, that if the mashkin I got from him is something that he constantly needs, I give it back to him, and then the person passes away. V'meis. So even though we've learned so many times that the halacha is that if somebody dies, if he leaves real estate, the real estate is mortgaged to loans that he has, however, metaltlin are not mortgaged, here the halacha will be that even though this mashkin that he had given to the malva, and the malva now gave back to him, even though it's a metatlin, he does have, the malva has a right to take. Umeis shemte megabe banav. His children have to give the metaplin. And the Mefarshim explain why. Because they say normally, one, a malva doesn't rely on metaplin to collect what's due to him. But that's in a regular situation of a loan. Here, however, where he already received it as a mashkin, so he's assuming that this is his no matter what, and therefore if the loiver passes away, even though the malva doesn't physically have the mashkin in his possession, when the loiver dies, the malva could take that mashkin from the assignment. So we see that he has a right to take it. And says the Gemara, Ahani Ksiva L'Garon. What it means, what the Ksiva accomplishes is as follows. So you see it's his, even without the wording. What it accomplishes is as follows. Let's say the Malva, again our case, takes the Mashkin, has to return the Mashkin, and the Loiv is using the Mashkin as the Torah gives him the right. And then, the Loiv is using the Mashkin all this time, and really, as we just finished describing, even without a shtar, the mashkin really belongs to the malva. And he's depreciating the value of that mashkin. And now, ultimately, he gives back the mashkin to the malva. Does he have to reimburse him for the depreciation? Teaches us the Gemara that the shtar accomplishes that it's completely the malva's, and he just gave the loiva right to use something that belongs to the malva, and the loiva will have to depreciate, will have to pay him for that depreciation. Another example, says the Gemara, Rabbi Yosi Adar Shloshan Hadid. The Tanya Rabbi Yosi Omer, Makam Shenagu Lasas Ksuva Milva, in a place where the minig is that the husband writes a ksuba. And we know in the ksuba there's the Nichsim Malug, and the Nechse Tzoyim Barzel. The Nechse Malug, the halach is that the husband has to give back. He eats the payrus, but he has to give them back if the marriage terminates. The Nechse Tzoyim Barzel represent that we evaluate them as their worth at the time of the marriage. Now, the halach is that Mokim Shenagu La'as Suva Milva, in the pace where all of these assets, we're going to learn with Tosis Pshat, where they write all these assets into the ksuba, goyva melva ligva, makam shenagu lasas ksuva milva, goyva milva. So, that's the amount that the wife is entitled to. However, lichboil, goyva mechza. Many times, and in our world we can appreciate this, we want the wife to feel good. And since we know that the ksuba is read under the chuppah, there's a large group at the wedding, and they hear, they're listening, as the ksuba is being read, and they want to make the woman feel good. So the husband doubles whatever is written into the ksuba. So let's say he's only giving her 500, we write 1,000 to make her feel good. So when it comes to actually collect, we don't follow the actual dollar amount written into the ksuba, she's only entitled to half. Nabloi, again, in honor of the wives, gova tlusa. They would write three times the value. Merema, migvi nami shivcha. Merema's would write into the shtar, also the amount, the real amount that's written in. Omle revina la remema, vatanya, lichvoil, that the minig is that you write double and you only collect kaina machza. So why are you following the wording of the ksuba? Answers the Gemara, loikasha. Had kanimine. If a kinyan was made in addition to the ksuba, it's a proof that that number is an actual number to be followed. Had loikanimine, then it's not an actual number. Says the Gemara, Ravina mashbich v'kasvul abarte. As the ksuba for Ravina's daughter was written, they added, they doubled it. Amalei nikneminei demar. Let's make a kinyan. Amalei imikna, if you want to make a kinyan, fine. The loy mechbal. I came to the daf yomi shir. You can't fool me. You can't double the number. Imikbal, and if you want to double the number, loy mikna, then I'm going to be careful not to make a kinyan, because then we're going to have to follow the actual number. Says the Gemara, Hahu gavra d'amalu. There was a person that says, Havelo abba meya zuzi libarati. I'm giving a nod in the $400. Biksubasa. Sholacha v'acha b'reid of avi l'kamed ervashi. How do we interpret his words? Abba meya. Do we say it means 400, which the inatamni meya? Since the minig, as we're saying, is to double the number, the ksuba should say 800. Or abba meya zuzi. Or do we say it's really 400? That he says the number 400 that he uses is the number that he wants written into the ksuba, but it's only mason, it's only $200. Am Ravashi said Ravashi chazinin. We look at the situation. Aber I am a havlu abim zozi. If he said give a 400, the inner tamni maya, or if he said havlu, if he used the words giver, we interpret to mean that he meant she should get 400. And in the ksuva, it should say 800. If on the other hand, he used the word ksuvala, that in the ksuva, we should write this number, we interpret it that he meant that he wants to give an abba mezuzi in a mouse, and there are only 200. Ikadamri, another interpretation, chazinon. Amravashi chazinon. Im amaliksubasa, if he used the word liksubasa, then we say he meant abba mezuzi, din and tamni meya, the iyama. Diksubasa, we say he meant Abba Meir Zuzid Inim Asim. However, says the Gemara Velahi, all of these approaches are incorrect. Loishna Dama Liksubasa, Loishna Dama Biksubasa, Abba Meir Zuzid Inim Asim, Adda Avala Havala Stama. Unless he says the words Havala, any other time, we don't interpret it that way. Says the Gemara, Hahu Gavra, the Kibbal Aram Mechavri. Somebody, again, the case that we've been discussing, accepted to work on somebody's field as an oris, and Omar and the oris said, Imavrina, if I will leave the land fallow, Yavinalach Alfazuza. I have to give you as a penalty something, 1,000 zuz, a tremendous amount of money. Avatilsa. So now, He left not the entire field open. He only didn't work on a third of field. Omer Nadoi. So Nadoi says, Dinahu, the Yavle Talas Meya, the Talas V'Talas V'Talsa. So since he said, I have to give you 1,000 if I don't work on the entire field, so 2/3 of the field he worked on, 1/3 of the field he didn't work on, and therefore he has to accept 1/3 of the penalty. What is 1/3 of the penalty? 1/3 of the penalty is 333. However, says Rava, he doesn't have to give anything. This is a situation of an asmachta, and he never really meant it, and therefore he doesn't have to give this kind of high number. So I saw a number of points that the Mefarshim discuss on this Gemara. First of all, we've already discussed previously the entire concept of an asmachta, and why asmachta loikanya. One is, one pshat is asmachta sometimes is something that's beyond my control, and since it's beyond my control, asmachta loikanya. Another pshat is that a person that accepts upon himself a knas, this is a perfect example of a knas, a person never really accepts upon himself a penalty. Because when he accepted upon himself, he never assumed that he would come to a time that he would have to pay the penalty. And that's why asmachta loikanya. Another pshat is something that we can't, at the time that we get into this agreement, predict what will or won't be, is always going to be in asmachta. And therefore asmachta loikanya. But here we have a very interesting machlokes rishonim. The rishonim discussed the following shaila. The person accepted upon himself, in our case, that he's going to pay a tremendous fine if he doesn't work on the field. And then he doesn't work on the field, and our Gemara says a smachta lekanya, and he doesn't have to pay this exorbitant fine. But does he have to pay the value of what he taka should have worked and earned? So some rishonim say, included in the concept, and maybe it's connected to the different pshatim we said in a smachta, included in the concept of a smachta loikanya, is that he doesn't have to pay any fine. However, most Rishonim, and that's the halacha, say that he has to pay proportionally. He has to pay what the field would have produced. So Taka, to pay this exorbitant fee, we don't have to pay. But what it would have produced, and he was negligent and didn't work, that I'll have to pay. Where does this come up? So I saw two shailos halacha lemaisa, where it comes up. One shaila halacha lemaisa is that you hire me, this is a big business, you hire me to collect your debts. And you tell me that, let's say, you collect this $1,000 debt that is owed to me, I'll give you $100. I'm only successful in collecting half the debt. I only collect $500. Am I entitled to $50? Or am I entitled to nothing? So most people can say, I get proportionally. If I would have gotten $100 for $1,000, I get $50 for $500. But then I saw another interesting shaila. Let's say, this comes up all the time also, let's say I tell a student, a child, a Talmud, whatever, if you finish learning the whole Masechet Bava Metzia, I'll give you a prize, $100. And he only learns the half the Masechta. Do I have to give him $50? The price can say I don't have to give him $50. Because learning a half a Masechta is not that I learned half, so I deserve half the prize. Learning half a Masechta is not as challenging as learning the whole Masechta. And I wanted a challenge. I wanted to get this child, this person, to learn the whole Masechta. Learning half the Masechta isn't that he accomplished half I wanted him to accomplish. He didn't accomplish what I wanted him to accomplish, and I don't have to give him anything. Maybe you should give him anyway, but halachically. Says the Gemara. Or the Rava that says that this is a situation of an Esmachta, Maishno, Mahadotanan. Why is this different from what we just learned? Im Oivir V'loy Evid, that if the Oris accepted upon himself that if he won't work on the field, Shail Mativa, so we see that it is a legitimate acceptance, and it's not an Esmachta. Why here does Rava call it an Esmachta? Answers the Gemara, Hasam like a Gazim, saying that if I don't work on the field, I'll have to reimburse you, is acceptable. Hacha, however, in this case, Kivan the Kamen Milsi Yaserta, he said this exorbitant number, the 1,000 zuz, gozma ba'alma hu de kogazim, and we say it falls into the category of an esmachta. Says the Gemara further, Hahu gavra de kaval ara l'shumshimi. A person accepted upon himself to work on the property and plant sesame. There's two characteristics about sesame. Sesame is an expensive, valuable product, produce. But on the other hand, sesame weakens, it depreciates the field more than most other produce. Zora chiti, and instead of planting sesame, he planted wheat. However, of the chiti kishumshmi, the wheat that he planted was a very good crop, and it was as valuable as sesame. Savarav Kahana Lameimer, Rav Kahana said that the Oris perhaps should have the right, Menachle Kach Shadara. In other words, let's say he agreed to give the landlord 50% of the yield of the field. So the Oris perhaps should be able to say to the landlord, yeah, you know what, I'm going to give you 50%. I should be allowed to give you less than 50% because I delivered to you Chitim, so I didn't depreciate the land, and I gave you a valuable chitim. I should get credit for this. Amalei Rav Ashlei Rav Kahana, Amri Anshi Kach Sha'ara V'loi Kach Shamara. The person who wants, the landlord, who wants 50%, he's not concerned. A person who needs cash, who needs income, is not concerned about the depreciation of the property. So yes, the Oris has a legitimate point to make to the landlord. Look what I did for you. I got you chitim that are worth more, that are is equal in value to the sesame without the consequence of ruining the property. he says to him, didn't do me any favor. I want as much shumsh, I want this kind of income because I need the income. Says the Gemara another story. Again, Hahu gavid the kibble ara l'shumshimi. There was a person, the Oris accepted to plant sesame, again with the characteristics of it being an expensive product, but it depreciates the property. But he instead, zorachiti, he went instead and planted grain, and of the chiti tfei mishumshimi. Not only did he plant grain instead of sesame, the grain that the field produced was more valuable than sesame. So here you have the best of both worlds. You ended up with a yield that's even more valuable than what you expected, and you didn't have the consequence of the field depreciating. So here, again, Sovar Vina Lameima, Yovle Shifcha de Beni Beni. Certainly the amount that he gained, that he's going to get wheat that's more expensive, that's more valuable than the sesame, and also not getting a depreciation in the field, should be taken into consideration. Omer of Achim Adiftel Ravini, Otahu Ashbach, Aral Ashbach, why do we give the entire credit to the Oris? The landlord certainly also has a share in the credit. It's his field that produced this high-quality grain, and therefore he's entitled to get his percentage and not have, and the work, and the Oris has no right to reduce what was promised to the landlord. Actually, I saw a shaila halach lamaisa based on this Gemara. There was a person who called a stockbroker and told the stockbroker, I would like you to invest my money to buy for me a certain stock. The broker, as he was about to go buy that stock, got information that stock was going to go down. So instead of buying the stock that he was instructed to buy, he bought his client a different stock that he got legally. Information was going to go up, and that's exactly what happened. So now the broker turns around to his client and says, I should get more than my regular commission. Because if I would have followed your instructions, you would have lost money. By me doing what I did, not only didn't you lose money, but you actually made money. And therefore, I deserve more than my regular commission. The halacha, based on this Gemara, is that since there's a commission agreement between the stockbroker and the client, he has to give him whatever the agreement is. The Paiskim do suggest that it would probably be the right and nice thing for the client to give the broker some sort of a gift, some sort of a recognition for what he did for him, but halachically, he has no right to demand it.